From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Virtual reality exists as a way to offer us a point of view into the world that's being created. But what happens pretty rarely in virtual reality films is a point of view from the filmmaker. My guest, writer-director Jeff Stanzler, is here to be the antidote to that, to offer a point of view as a filmmaker that's very much a part of the virtual reality experience in his new project, State Power. First of all, Jeff, thanks so much for being here.
Great to be here.
But that really is something, isn't it? It's something you must have noted, that so often these VR films are about trying to create an experience while offering us the filmmaker's point of view, right?
I've grown to know that. I mean, definitely VR was birthed and is still being driven by the tech world. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, Inarritu and a couple other people have, you know, dipped their toes in the water. But for the most part, it's still run by people who are trying to develop headsets and, you know, different delivery systems and not by the artists / creators yet.
Because I was thinking, too, that so often film nowadays, both regular film and VR, is about creating spectacle rather than creating an emotional point of entry, isn't it?
Yeah. I think Scorsese might have said something about that recently.
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, your films, basically, if we go back to Sorry Haters, stuff you've done, it's been about creating actually a multiple points of view. So we're carried along by the characters in these pieces as much
Correct.
As anything.
Yeah, true. And that's still what interests me. It's still, you know, on the rare occasion I can put the kids in a kennel and get out to a movie theater. You know, I'm doing that because I'm interested in trying to see what a new character in our day and age could feel like cinematically. And yes, that's always been what's captivated me for whatever reason. And yes, I've been a fan of many films that the spectacle comes first and foremost. But by and large, I go to meet somebody new.
So talk to me about the creation of State Power, where this came from for you.
Well, it was a bit of a two-step, I'd have to say. First is when I became a fan of VR. And, you know, I like to tell people, the first time I put on a headset, I literally had to get paid to do it. I was that reluctant because I teach film. I'm a professor at Chapman University. Maybe some of my students are listening now. So hello to them. But yeah, a couple years ago, I had a student who wanted to do his film in virtual reality. And his very arrogant professor, i.e. me, told him, you know, don't do that.
You Why?
Know, because you know, a lot of film students and, you know, many filmmakers, it's all about the gear. And, you know, I've been through the fads, you know, rotoscope, 3D, smell-o-vision, the tingler or what have you. And I thought, yeah, it's my duty to tell this student, you know, try and tell a story first. But, you know, kudos to him. He ignored me and he went and made this VR film. And so it was my job to finally put on one of those headsets. And when I did, it might have been 30 seconds in, maybe 15, where I said, this is the future. This is something new. This is the medium here is the message. And not the massage.
What was it about that? Obviously, it was something visceral about the experience. But what was it that pulled you into it, having fought and having, as you said, seen so many new idioms created over the past few decades, I should say?
Well, I think the first thing that really grabbed me about VR is that it's active. And we are becoming more and more very, very passive people. I mean, you put on a headset, you are immersed in it, and you need to find your environment. You need to look.
You can literally move your body.
You can literally
turn yourself around and see things
in our piece, people watch it, sometimes standing, sometimes in a swivel chair. So that's the first thing, the fact that it was active. But the other thing that I realized is it's incredibly democratic. I mean, you can look where you want. And, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm all about being in the hands of a master filmmaker, you know, and Hitchcock, you know, cutting right from, you know, Jimmy Stewart with the binoculars to who was it, Raymond Burr with the suitcase. And yeah, I have enjoyed that my entire life. But here we have, like I say, a new democratic way of experiencing a story. And the fact that it's coming at a time when our democracy is getting less and less, that was very, you know, grabbing for me. And then the other thing I noticed is that it is incredibly democratic, but at the same time, it is absolutely authoritarian, because you can look wherever you want, but you can't look away. So once that kind of got its grips in me, I said, okay, I'm going to follow where this goes, and I'm going to become a fan and see. I knew that the language of VR has not been developed yet. You know, you kind of feel like, you know, you're watching The Great Train Robbery or something, or maybe even, you know, before that. But I wanted to be along for the ride. And then very shortly there after that experience, I was doing, I think, what I do way too much of, and maybe you do too. I was scouring the internet for something to distract me or something to foment whatever outrage I was feeling at the time. And I came across this article whose headline was maybe the meatiest piece of clickbait ever constructed for my eyes. And the headline of the article was, "Are Artists Responsible for the Rise of Trump?" And I read that. I see the look on your face. I had that same look. I thought, you know, what a question to pose. I mean, you know, I've been an artist most of my adult life. Many of my friends are artists. We're by and large very generous, tolerant people. So, you know, who on earth could be suggesting such a thing? So I started to read the article, and I saw that this was a question being posed by Adam Curtis. I don't know if you're a fan, but yeah, I'm a longtime fan of Adam Curtis. I think he's maybe, you know, one of the great, maybe the great political essayist / documentarian, is that a good way to put him, of our day and age.
We use a documentary as a form of essay, as a matter of fact.
Correct, correct. Mesmerizingly so. So the fact that Adam Curtis was saying this and not, you know, some reactionary Doofenstein, if to use a more clinical term, would be asking this, I thought I got to read why Adam Curtis thinks artists could possibly have a hand in what is going on now. And what he said was that, you know, since the early 70s, art has become more and more about the self, about the artist, about how artists now nakedly share their angels and their demons. And we as the viewer or the audience have some sort of cathartic response to that. And then the artist moves on to another project, and we move on to try and get our next arty high. And in his eyes, there's something very transactional about that. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I you know, most of 99% of the art that I've been, you know, transformed by in my life has been these personal statements from artists.
Isn't that the kind of the sort of the basic tenet of art? I mean, that it's really that kind of expurgatory experience for the artist. And what was Curtis saying?
Well, what he is saying, and you know, hopefully you'll talk to him one day and he can say it for himself. But what he was asking was, at certain points in history, things have gotten to such a critical point of danger that artists give themselves up to movements. You know, he talked about...
Did he say Riefenstahl in the piece?
Well, Leni Riefenstahl would be a good example. Diego Rivera would be another example. The Federal
the
Theater
period,
Project.
Yes, that same period. In exactly. The 30s, yeah, sure.
And then, you know, you had, like, during World War II, you had the five directors, you know, Capra and William Wyler.
Yeah.
And Ford.
And George Stevens, yes.
Yeah, and they all stopped making musicals and comedies and whatever, and they went and made documentaries about what was going on in World War II. And, you know, you could might rightly call them propaganda, but here you had artists trying to use their skills to react to what they felt was, as I said, a critical juncture in our history.
And actually a reaction to what Riefenstahl was doing, and that Department of War understood the power of what they were doing. By the way, it's a treatment. My guess is under basically asking questions about fascism in film is director, writer Jeff Stantler, whose new project is State Power. But you were saying, though, about Curtis basically inspiring you to...
Right. Well, he and so what he said is maybe artists need to get together and work more collectively and find a new language that will recognize the movements that need to happen.
But what you're talking about here is this interesting sort of schism, the argument of really the auteur theory versus what film really is. I mean, because filmmaking is often a collective experience, is it not?
Well, it depends. I mean, yes, depending on what approach you're talking about. Yes, a studio film is absolutely a, you know, more of a collective of, you know, executives and some of the artists. And yes, you know, you can have auteurs sometimes work within that. And yes, more often than not, when you have someone with great stature in film, you know, who's a writer-director in particular, you know, then you have one person's personality and point of view come across very strongly. I mean, obviously, they need to work with, you know, different elements of the cast and crew to bring that out. But I mean, I think, you know, when you watch an Almodovar film, and you know, I'm a huge fan, I mean, you know who is behind every moment in this film. I mean, his personality leaps off the screen in a quite noble way. But, you know, responding to what Curtis was asking, if we need to find a new language, and then here I am just having stumbled across this medium whose language hasn't been written, I thought, well, you know, maybe then I need to get into this game and try to find a collective of people to produce something in this new medium to help sort of stumble through the dark and find a new language to connect to people. And that's more or less how State Power came to be.
If you can do quickly, tell the audience what State Power is.
All right, I'll try my elevator to the gallows pitch.
There you go.
All right, so State Power is a virtual reality series where you, the viewer, will get a 360-degree vantage point to see, hear, touch, smell, maybe even taste what it will feel like for you once America's democracy falls. And we do this by throwing our participant headfirst into...
Slash audience member.
Slash audience member. We like to say participant to sort of accent the active part of it.
Yes. Yeah.
So we will throw the participant in a virtual way headfirst into a jail cell that resides within one of the many pop-up prison camps that'll soon be dotting this landscape of ours. And these prison camps are popping up because they're... is a need to house an overflow of dissidents, no longer just undocumented immigrants, no longer just people of color who are disenfranchised, but now they're starting to house journalists, film critics, artists, educators, people who like too many of the wrong pages on Facebook, etc. But as we started to develop this story, we absolutely didn't want to preach to only one choir. We had a lot of choirs that we wanted to preach to. So we have made it an interactive experience as well. And you, before you enter the experience, can answer some questions. And you can decide, in one instance, that you can watch a version where this prison camp has been built, because in our very near future, there is going to be an overthrow of our government by right-wing extremists.
I'm going to ask you to take a break. We can talk more about this.
All right, I got to get to the conversely.
Yeah, do that. My guest who's offering a different kind of the gospel is writer-director Jeff Stantler. His new project is the VR project, State Power. It's the treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car. Already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. If, like me, you were sitting here with bated breath waiting for a writer-director Jesse Lanza to finish telling us about his new project, State Power, now's your chance. Go.
Yes. So I was saying that State Power does have an interactive element to it. And you could choose different versions.
You choose your dystopia.
You could, yes.
Having seen that, I could go.
Yes.
It's funny because I should say to give the audience, forgive me, potential participants and point of entry into this. When we first get into this, it looks incredibly modern day. Also, to the point of, it feels the kind of, in fact, I saw it not far from Hollywood Boulevard, where you could expect this kind of arrest to happen on a regular basis. People being roused, the homeless, people making too much noise, the kind of people who live on the margins often populate that part of this Los Angeles anyway. So it felt incredibly real to me, while adding the kind of political implications that you bring to the film.
Yeah, I mean, it's meant to make you feel as if this is not happening 20, 30 years from now, but this could be happening, very soon after our next election.
As you talk about that, because it's very poignant in not trying to make it feel futuristic, because so often in dystopian fiction or dystopian or dramatic projects, I should say, people feel they have to catapult us a couple of years into the future or something, or create an alternative reality, if you will. And you chose to make this as down and dirty as possible.
Right.
And almost, not, I shouldn't say almost, it's VR documentary style. I mean, handheld and almost that kind of sense of vertigo you sometimes get with that kind of documentary filmmaking too. There are a lot of artistic decisions you chose to make this thing feel as sort of gritty and real and current as possible.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think me with the collective that we're working with, we feel that to comfort people now is a malpractice of how we would use our artistic talents. We would like, I did want to finish my thought though on the interactivity, because yes, you can watch this situation that we created and think that, oh, it's a result of, right-wing extremists taking over. But you could also watch this from the perspective that there's been a leftist revolution that has tried and failed to confiscate all the 350 some odd million guns there are across our country, and has rogue factions of police that they're not unable to control, and so has resorted to guerrilla tactics. So, there are different frameworks within which you can have this experience.
In fact, you remind me, after I watched, you asked me if I thought it was right wing or left wing, and I said I thought it could be either, and you said that's what you wanted.
Yes. Yes. And, when we show it, have gotten some pushback for that, because...
Why?
Well, and I don't think, I don't want to make a false equivalence and say that, the chance for violence from the left and the right is equal. I think factually that's certainly not true, certainly not of late. Certainly we had the Weather Underground in the 60s or whatever, had a different take to it. But for people from the left to say that the left is incapable of violence, I think is also something that we need to start at least admitting, that if in a certain situation resources become scarce, no matter whether you're left or right, as our society starts to enter a new civility, that even if you are on the left, there very well could be violent reactions from the left. So I felt, as a quote-unquote artist, we need to imagine the unimaginable. And that was what we wanted to also be a part of a choice in this experience.
But I wanted to get back to, by the way, we're talking about left versus right on The Treatment with my guest, the creator, director of State Power, Jeff Stanzler. I want to get back to the filmmaking language you bring to this. Because so often in VR projects, it's about trying to present a world where the products are there, basically, or the materials there to sell the products, as you were saying earlier. And you almost, no, I shouldn't say almost, you want to create this experience where you get people's pulse rate up immediately.
Correct. Yeah, and we do. And, you know, one thing we got to do recently is, I don't know if you know what Politicon is. It's kind of like Comic-Con for politics. So we got to do
a
little.
Sure they love that comparison.
And, you know, there's a lot to that as well, that comparison. But we set up, you know, this little booth, me and the rest of the people who helped develop this. And we had people come in and have the experience. And we had guys, you know, in MAGA hats come up, sit down, put on the headset. We had, you know, vegan lesbians with Bernie buttons sit down and have the experience and choose all sorts of different things. But what we noticed almost immediately was that when people take off the headsets, there's this really special window. It might be a minute long, might be 5 minutes long sometimes, where people, it's like when someone wakes up from a dream almost, and they speak off the cuff. And a lot of times people were stumbling around trying to remember what their tribal talking points were. And we interviewed them. You know, we have some of those interviews posted on our website, statepowervr.com. And yeah, so we thought, you know, there's something to take advantage of here. And so now what we've done is we've developed it into an installation, which we'll be having next week at the Infinity Festival.
Let's get specific here so people know where they can see it, Infinity Festival, and then and what date.
Yeah, the Infinity Festival is going to be here in Los Angeles November 8th and 9th at the Goya Studios. You can come to our website and we'll get you tickets, and you can actually sign up to see the State Power
Experience. Our website again is?
StatePowerVR.com. Okay. And yeah, you could sign up to just have the experience and go on your way. I think they have like the Spider-Man experience and Star Wars right next to us, which is going to be really interesting to have that crossover. Or if you'd like, and certainly we'd like, you can sign up for one of our time slots where you have the experience. We put you, we're rebuilding the cage that we actually filmed in.
Oh, no kidding.
No kidding, yeah. And we're going to put a hood over your head.
Before you go any further, tell them, tell the audience or your potential participants,
thank you,
what that cage is.
It was a cage built by part of our collective, Victor Casas. He built it out of rebar, and in particular, we approached at this prison camp. We'd be built in a very ramshackle way, just because we didn't foresee, you know, sort of an Orwellian, well-run Big Brother machine would be building these prison camps, but more it would be, you know, sort of a hodgepodge of disconnected different groups. So yes, that's what gave birth to the design of the cage, and that's what we're going to be rebuilding.
So we should say this cage is an integral part of the opening segment.
Correct.
Of State Power, where we see people thrown into this cage. And what to me is so gripping about that cage, it feels very DIY. It feels like the kind of thing where let's just throw this thing up so we can get people into it.
Yeah.
It feels, and I'm sure this is part of your intention as well, whatever is happening, whatever momentum is started, is just getting started. So there hasn't been a chance for there to be an infrastructure yet, and that it's inventing itself as it goes along, in the same way the story is.
That's true. That's very true. And you know, I actually find it more fearful to be with a group that doesn't quite know what the chain of command is and doesn't quite know a procedure to follow. And yes, that was very much part of the groundwork for how we started the story.
It's funny, by the way, talking to the creator of another dystopia, not Sorry Haters, but State Power, Jeff Stanley's The Treatment. As we're talking about this, I realized, just thinking back to some things you've done, and you always want to create this kind of dislocation for audiences, or disorientation, where we have to catch up rather than having things told to us from the outset. And did you think that the way you work as a writer, as a storyteller, lent itself to VR because it's so much about you want people to catch up with it rather than telling them exactly where they are?
I never thought of it, but yeah. I mean, one of the interesting things, I tell people when I made or when, you know, we started making State Power, I had to unlearn much more than I needed to learn, you know, from filmmaking. Because so much about VR is giving people this environment that they can explore. So, you know, we start, you see the cage, you see the room, you know, in film, it seems like a lifetime before we get to the next development. But in VR, you're offering the chance for people to try and figure out where they are, what has happened to bring them here. So, yeah, I didn't think of it, but it does, in a weird way, seem an extension of the films I've made before.
Yeah, I wonder if that wasn't one of the things you found attractive about it. But I guess it's kind of sheer inadvertence. But that and I guess I kind of wonder where that comes from with you, the idea of sort of saying, step into this world. I mean, in fact, what you want to do is, as a creator, is to build worlds. So people have to come in and ask themselves the kinds of questions that the characters do, rather than having the information laid out to them.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, that's the root of great storytelling when it's done right. You know, I don't know what the old adage is. It's, what is it? You know, go in late, get out early kind of thing. And if you're not spoon feeding an audience, again, they'll be much more inclined to be active with it, to try and project themselves into it more. You know, rather than, once you see a moment in a movie and you know what the next three moments are, and what is it, you go for a bathroom break and your friend on the sofa says, hey, you want me to tell you what you missed? And your friend says, no, you say to your friend, no, I got it. I know what I'm going to miss. And, you know, again, that makes us a more passive viewer.
I just wonder, when you were talking about that window you have, people Correct. Basically having their, you know, belief systems kind of shaken by this and they're just reacting in the most open terms. What was that like the first time you started to notice that as a trend of people reacting to this in this way?
Yeah, it was mind-blowing. It was mind-blowing, especially, you know, in that atmosphere that we were conducting the test viewing in, because people are seemingly more and more these days picking a side, picking a corner, and are unable to see how anybody else could pick anything different. And it's you know, every storyteller's dream that you can make people, you know, rethink why they have those positions and why other people have different ones. And, you know, much like, you know, when I read that article from Adam Curtis, it's like, made me think, God, have I been doing my whole life wrong trying to tell these personal stories? Do I need to look at it in a different way? So yeah, I think that if we can keep building on that, and all of this is experiment too, if we can keep building on taking that moment, putting people who maybe don't agree with each other inside this cage to have that experience, maybe some dialogue will start that will have some resonance. That's, you know, that's really sort of the holy grail here.
Okay, well, quickly recap where the people can see this.
Absolutely. Week. The Goya Studios, which is located on Cahuenga near Sunset here in Los Angeles on November 8th and 9th, is going to be hosting the Infinity Festival. You can go right now to statepowervr.com. We'll get you tickets that I think are valued at $99. So there's a lot of gift giving going on here. So we can get you tickets and get you a time slot to see State Power. You can see all the other, you know, very cool exhibits at the Infinity Festival. And if you have any questions, you can write us there at the website, and we'll try and figure out which side you should be exposed to if you need guidance there.
Thank you so much, Jeff. We're out of time. My guest is Jeff Sandler's new project, which you can see this next weekend, is State Power. Our recording engineer, who is also mixing and editing the show, is Kat Yor. I don't do enough, ladies and gentlemen. Clearly, it's the treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.